And my next guest is Laura Reese of Vegan Justice League. Now, Laura's got a Renaissance Woman biography with a Bachelor of Science in Biomedical and Electrical Engineering, and she's worked in the semiconductor industry and then studied personal finance. Excuse me. And then started researching our food system. Only a couple of years ago, adopted a vegan lifestyle and is now part of the Vegan Justice League. And we're going to hear more about that right now. Laura, welcome and thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So just briefly, it was a couple of years ago. What was it for you that turned the vegan light on for you?
Well, I have terrible allergies in my face, you know, nasal, sinusitis all the time, asthma too. And I I tried doing an elimination diet. I read a book that a friend gave me that was on epigenetics and thought, you know, midway through the book, maybe food has something to do with it, even though I never really tested positive for food. So I limited my food for a full month, and I was really just eating a whole food plant-based diet, minus a handful of typical allergens like peanuts. And in doing that, I think I just became open to learning about what this diet was all about. So I found all the typical documentaries, you know, about, you know, What the Health, Forks Over Knives. And then I watched Cowspiracy and, you know, the whole vegan funnel of documentaries.
Yep.
And I was watching Carnage, Swallowing the Past, a mockumentary, a joke movie by Simon Amstel on veganism with my son, 13-year-old son. At the time, I guess he was 12. And at the end of the movie, he just said, let's go vegan. And my husband was kind of half listening in the background. He said, all right, let's go vegan. And I said, let's go vegan. I mean, we were all three kind of well on our way anyway. I definitely was. And then, you know, watching Earthlings, I made myself watch it twice because, you know, I was so steeped in carnism, I just wanted to remember. It's really easy for me to compartmentalize and see animals as things rather than fellow earthlings that I wanted to impair that tool in my brain so I couldn't not see them as fellow earthlings. So that's kind of how it got started.
Okay, I'm curious because you haven't been vegan very long, a couple of years, and you've just like totally immersed yourself and you're involved with the Vegan Justice League, which we're going to talk about in a moment, which is really important, great work. I like to ask people who are new vegans what you were thinking about before you became a vegan. You must have known that vegans were out there. What was your... I know it took the films to figure it out, but were you just not thinking about food? I'm just curious. Because for me, I became vegan 31 years ago. I don't remember.
Oh, really? I just thought the way we ate was normal, necessary, natural. Well, maybe not natural because of all the processing in our food. But I thought it was normal and necessary. And it just kind of... When I realized that eating animals just wasn't necessary, you ask yourself, well, then why am I eating them?
Yep.
That kind of came down to that.
It's an interesting... We were just talking in the first part of the program how we're programmed as children. And there's this irony because we're taught to love animals and then we're taught that it's okay to kill them. Doesn't make any sense.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's absurd. It's tragic when I see videos of kids and their, like, 4-H, their little calf they raised, is being taken to the sale barn to be sold off for slaughter, and they're crying. I just think, that kid gets it. And then he or she is being told by all the adults around them. You know, they're almost ridiculed for that. And what a shame.
That can't bode well for them in their adult life when they've buried away something like that.
Yeah, no.
All right, tell me about the Vegan Justice League.
Okay, the Vegan Justice League, we really just have one simple purpose. We want to lobby against animal agriculture subsidies. And the first step, our lobbying campaign we're pursuing right now, is what I brought into Vegan Justice League, which was where I hadn't heard of Connie Spence. I hadn't heard of, you know, I didn't know anybody in the vegan movement. And shortly after going vegan, I started to read a lot about the impact of animal agriculture and actually looking at the studies of methane emissions and water pollution, and I was horrified. So
yeah, it's scary.
I mean, it was beyond anything I could have imagined. I just couldn't believe it. And it wasn't just Cowspiracy. It was looking at, like, the IPCC reports and Livestock's Long Shadow and a couple of more up-to-date publications. So I found out about this organization called Lobbyists for Good, and I applied to do a lobbying campaign with them to end all animal agriculture subsidies. Well, of course, that's a little much to chew on off the bat. Mm-hmm. So we came up with a pilot program to help animal agriculture or animal farmers transition to plant farming or other sustainable, non-exploitative businesses. And so we lobbied in February for that legislation, and we're still lobbying for it. And since then, I've brought it to the Vegan Justice League, and that's the first legislation that we are lobbying for. And right now, we're crafting our strategy for the Hill in September and going forward into the fall to get that legislation passed.
Well, what's so important and smart about it is it's very easy to say, this is wrong, we shouldn't do this. But to offer a solution and give someone a path to move away from something and towards something better is something that's workable. I remember I had this opportunity. I spoke to 250 cattle producers at a feedlot in Nevada just before a bull sale. And the owner, she blew my mind, but she decided to have this panel to talk about animal agriculture's impact on climate change. And she wanted to have a vegan on the panel. And I was the lucky one. I thought they were going to kill me, but they were very respectful. And unfortunately, I wasn't given enough time to talk, but they don't know what else to do. They don't know what else to do other than raise animals. This is what's been in their family for a long time, and I think a lot of them are starting to get it. And as I was just talking with my previous guests, now there are all these plant meats coming out, and it's giving them competition too. And they need a way out.
Yeah, there's a book called Switch by the Heath Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And a big part of it is that I remember that I've taken with me and adopted is the whole concept of shape the path. If you want people to change, you can't just point out what's wrong. You need to make them a little uncomfortable, certainly, with the status quo and make them look at it. But in the next breath, you need to shape the path for what they can do to get out of being part of the problem and start being part of the solution. So you need both. So that's what we see this legislation as being, is shaping the path so that animal farmers who electively want to stop being part of the problem and want to start being part of the solution and maybe growing crops to sell to Impossible Foods or to Beyond Meat, you know, and make money without asking for handouts from the government, which most farmers don't want to do that. I think some of the big agribusinesses, they're pretty comfortable with taking government money. But, for example, a dairy farmer I'm working with in Wisconsin who really wants to transition, he doesn't want to take handouts. He wants to make his own money.
Mm.
But that's, mm-hmm. at least that's my impression. So yeah, if we can shape the path and get and transition them into lucrative businesses where they're still their own bosses, still get to use their own land, they're just not using animals, and they're not, and they're no longer polluting the planet. Maybe they're actually rebuilding soil and sequestering carbon by rewilding some of their land. Yeah, we should absolutely show them how they can do that.
I don't know if you're familiar with this one. I know I had heard about this one story in Finland that I think occurred in the 70s, and I tried to find out more follow-up information on it, and I could never find it. But the government realized that dairy wasn't good for the public, and they offered some dairy farmers a transition to growing raspberries, I think it was. And it was a great story, but I don't know what's come of it since then.
I'm going to have to Google that. Thank you.
Yeah, please do. And then come back and let me know.
So for the Vegan Justice League specifically, when I was raising funds, I was trying to raise $5,000 for the Lobbyist for Good campaign, and I kept hearing people say, hey, you need to get in touch with Connie Spence, Vegan Batgirl. And so I joined in her meetings once a week and just started helping out wherever I could. I started out helping out with research. And then now I'm just spending almost all my time on it. And what we're doing is very simple. We're asking people to sign up to give monthly contributions. $10 a month is really what we recommend, but people can sign up for as little as a dollar a month, because what we need is regular money coming in so that we can have a lobbying force in place that's always working. So we're not just doing one-off projects. We have an actual presence in Washington, D.C., because when I was lobbying there for 3 weeks, many of the lobbyists said to me, there's a phrase here, and it's when you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And to go for just one campaign, fine, you might get a piece of legislation passed or you might block another, but these guys in the animal ag industry, they're spending $40 million a year. They've got somebody on Capitol Hill at all times.
Yep. Whispering in everyone's ears.
Mm-hmm. And listening to what's going on and forming strategy to extract as much of our tax money to line the pockets of people who are exploiting animals for profit. It's not right.
One of the things we've been hearing more about, which in some ways you could look at it positively, is the people that are involved with making milk products and making meat products and making cheese products, making butter products, don't want vegan people using the words milk, cheese, butter, and meat. And some of the states have been successful in passing laws that say we can't call vegan butter butter. Miyoko's putting a little sticker on her vegan cultured butter now in Wisconsin that says vegetable spread. We all know what it is. The people that want it, that's what they want. They don't want the dairy. We know it, but they're getting nervous. They're seeing their loss in market share, and so they're getting their way in terms of the vocabulary. So in some ways, I see that as positive, but it's crazy what they're doing. And we need more lobbyists to fight that.
Absolutely. I mean, I see these efforts to police language on packaging as sort of like what a aging, dying cash cow industry does when it has a lot of money, but it's not innovating new products. And so it goes to the government to get handouts. It goes to the government to erect barriers to entry into their markets. And this is just the classic play of dying industries. And rather than putting them on life support or creating new laws around language to protect their dying industry, we just need them to transition into the new food economy, which is plant-based. And no,
I'm not a big fan of these big corporations, especially these big food corporations, but some of them are getting it, and they know if you can't beat them, join them. And you take, there are so many examples of like Oh, what's
Tyson
their,
has been a trip to watch.
Unilever, for example, they make Hellmann's mayonnaise on the East Coast and Best Foods on the West Coast. And they were fighting with the company that's now called Just. It's had a number of different names over the years, but they make a vegan mayo, and they were saying you can't call it mayo. And they fought with them, and then they finally just dropped out and decided to make their own vegan mayo.
Yeah.
I'm not going to buy it, but I'm glad they're making vegan mayo.
Yeah, it's a complicated situation when you're talking about big corporations whose main product is animal-based foods. But yeah, ultimately, if they're going to move it, I would rather them move into the plant-based markets than fight against the plant-based markets.
Okay, so I'm on the Vegan Justice League website on your frequently asked questions. Can you talk about this statement? How can you claim no animals are being saved despite our vegan activism?
Yeah, we run into a lot of pushback when we say, when we make statements about how do you know that animals are actually being saved, and people will send us an article. And when you look through the article, it's almost always a back of the napkin calculation where somebody's saying, oh, well, each vegan is not eating 100 animals, give or take, and multiply it by the number of vegans, and that's the number of animals saved. But if you look at the USDA website and you look at the production numbers and you look at especially the stockpile of the oversupply of the glut in production and what what farmers, American Farmers Union president called a chronic oversupply, meaning it's always happening. You see that the animal production is going up despite vegans. And you can say, when you look at it, you go, well, okay, well, the population's growing faster than the vegan population is. But the vegan population still should have some effect. And also the people who are reducitarians should be having some effect. I mean, heck, my parents stopped. They started drinking Ripple 2 years ago. But the local dairy farmers are getting, I just read an article about how they're getting paid by the federal government to keep producing because the poor farmers, the price of milk is low. Well, the price of milk is low because people don't want to buy it. So they're still breeding just as many cows, polluting the rivers, killing the salmon, and emitting greenhouse gases to the tune of like 300 kilograms per milking cow, if you include everything around them. So that's where it comes from. We're not saying that our vegan choices have no effect. They absolutely do. We are growing the plant-based food market, which is absolutely critical because omnis and carnists and reducitarians alike, that just gives them more options, which is great. But our market signal is at best being muted, but really I think it's completely disconnected from the production plans of animal ag because they get paid anyway. They get paid, and these are insurance schemes. Years ago, the subsidy schemes in the Farm Bill went from being handouts to being more, quote-unquote, insurance. But really, that just means when the margins drop low enough, they get paid. Well, that's margins drop low. Maybe it's because the demand's dropping that they get paid anyway. Or, so they're just disconnected from the usual laws of supply and demand, and we are determined to go to Capitol Hill and make them play by the same rules that all the other industries are made to play by. That we've been
good.
Taught that
unfortunately
that we've been
the,
taught
the children
is good and holy,
the children.
Right?
I'm sorry. I wanted to say the children lose too, because when there's an excess of food that isn't being sold in the dairy industry, it goes to the school lunch program.
Oh, and that just breaks my heart. I mean, you read these studies about the correlation of type 1 diabetes and drinking cow's milk. And you read about asthma and about I mean, kids have plaque in their veins before they're 20.
So what's really nutty is the tax system. And there's a lot of people that don't like paying a lot of tax. And we have the Republican Party that's changed the whole system. And they're always saying we need to tax less, not more. And so we should be taxing less and not paying all these subsidies. It doesn't make sense.
Exactly. Exactly. And this is one of the reasons why we wrote our legislation the way we wrote it, because it's really not Democrat or Republican. It's very much about the justice of not using our the injustice of using our tax dollars to put a finger on the scale in the free market. So we're looking for bipartisan support in the House and the Senate. And hopefully we'll get it. We've got a plan. We'll see if we can execute to it. But yeah, we're using a lot of those talking points that people in the GOP would use, and I have no problem with that. Most of my family's Republican, so I hear their talking points all the time.
Mm-hmm. What about the Democratic presidential candidates that are stumping around these days? Is there any way to get them informed about the work that you're doing? Certainly Cory Booker would be somebody who might be interested, but I think a number of them, this should be an important campaign point.
Yeah, I can. So part of our strategy for September, we're going to focus on the Senate, and we're also going to corral the support among the core supporters in the House. And certainly Cory Booker is somebody who we're targeting. And then for some of the other candidates, like Yang, I could see him being on board with this. I could see Buttigieg, I don't know if I'm saying his name right, being on board with this. Elizabeth mm-hmm. Warren, for sure. I don't know.
You know, I just want to mention Elizabeth Warren for a moment, and I love her. And she's one of my favorites of the potential Democratic candidates. But I was informed that she did support this law to protect the dairy farmers. And I think it had to do with calling the dairy products dairy and the semantics portion.
Oh, well,
I'm not remembering it all right now, but she was either one of the sponsors or a supporter of it. So she needs a little more education when it comes to animal agriculture.
It sounds like it. I talked with a couple of Bernie Sanders' staffers when I was in lobbying in February, and they were certainly open to the idea of helping dairy farmers transition. They liked the idea of giving that as an option to their dairy farmers who are feeling the prices fall and mm-hmm. who see that, you know, subsidies can only last so long and maybe transition to something different. They weren't as pro-dairy as Bernie Sanders is, and he kind of has to be. I mean, that's a huge part of their agricultural economy. It's something like 2/3 of their agriculture income is from the dairy yep. industry. He can't not support them. So we're hoping that the legislation that we're pushing even would appeal to a politician like Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders, who are outwardly very pro-dairy farmers. So it's kind of hard to oppose what we've put together.
The transition concept is genius, and I really wish you the best of luck with that. That's the ticket.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yeah. The Vegan Justice League is, we're going to be, I think we stand a good chance of pushing this through. Lobbyists are expensive, but we've got a great partner in Lobbyists for Good. They're a platform for individuals and for nonprofits. So I would recommend if anybody has a election reform or like making sure that all the primary and general election debates are held by C-SPAN, not by corporate news, for example. Like, if that's what you care about, go to Lobbyists for Good and start a campaign. I would totally be doing that, but my hands are full. I want to focus on the
There's only so much we can all do. But the thing behind lobbying, and you've mentioned it already, is money. And the monsters have all the money. And they do all the, quote, educating of our representatives because they have all the lobbyists, they can afford it, and they can craft their plan. And there's just no one really out there on the other side, and we need to be there. And the way to be there is money.
Can I just say, yes, we need money, but one thing we are also doing is we're starting a DIY local lobby, Vegan Justice League, DIY local lobbying series, where we're tapping into the talents of people who have been lobbying at their city councils and lobbying at the state level and having them do webinars where we can go in and do Q&As, and they'll impart their wisdom and what they've learned about the tips and tricks of going to your local governments and lobbying yourself, because you don't have to pay someone. But it does take, I think it's worth learning from people who have learned their lessons the hard way. And people could go, say, research their local property tax laws and see if it favors cattle ranching and lobby to have that equalized so maybe it favors rewilding. You could go educate your council about the true effects of animal agriculture. And our first series panelist is Milan Gore in Berkeley, and he's going to talk about ways you can educate your local cities about using consumption-based estimates for environmental impact versus production, or no, maybe it's the opposite, production-based impacts versus consumption-based, so that they actually take into account the true costs of animal agriculture and having barbecue in the city. All these sorts of things, these are at the local level, and people can do them. They don't need to hire a big, swanky lobbyist. Get a few friends together, do this local lobbying series, go to a few meetings. Don't talk at first. Just listen. Kind of get to know who the players are and just get started. Find one issue. Work on it.
These are really great points. Very empowering. Thank you for sharing them with us. Working at the local level is so very important. Laura Reese, thank you for joining me today and to talk about the Vegan Justice League. I'm so thrilled to hear about this work.
It's my pleasure to do it. I think the more we join forces, the more effect we can have. So, you know, people can go to veganjusticeleague.com and check us out.
Sounds good. Veganjusticeleague.com. Thanks again for joining me on It's All About Food. And that's the end of the show, everybody. Thanks for joining me. And we'll be back next week. In the meantime, have a delicious week. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.